Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening, well, that's just the three of us because no one else is watching this live. We say good evening, universe, and welcome to the, the fourth Illegal Curvecast. Alongside my regular colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Manuk, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased that you are tuning into this whenever it is that you are doing so, be it on YouTube, where, of course, you can see our handsome faces, or handsome with an asterisk, I suppose, or be it via podcast where you can hear the dulcet tones of our voice. Ezzy, I have to start with obviously the breaking news of the day is you no longer look like a homeless person. Now you are clean shaven. You've got a haircut. The whole thing is off-putting. I much preferred you as a homeless person than I did clean shaven professional Ezra Ginsberg.
And this haircut is really fresh. Like, this is a 2 hour ago haircut, but I sold out, boys. Like, I thought I was going to go, you know, another few months without getting a haircut. But you know why I ultimately decided to get a haircut? And not only did I get a haircut, I decided to shave off the beard entirely. I just couldn't stand the amount of mustache hairs I had in my mouth. Like, every time I ate anything, there were just curly mustache hairs in there. So, you know, I decided to get the cut, and you know, the beard's going to grow back in a couple of weeks. You know that, Drew, but yeah, it feels good to, you know, to be able to touch the skin and have the, you know, the sleek look that you have, Drew. So I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, sleek and aerodynamic. That's usually how people describe me. And Dave Manuk, if the thought of Ezzy eating his own mustache hair didn't get us off onto a good start, I'm going to say good evening, and maybe you can bring us back to something resembling society.
Such as?
I don't know. Whatever you have, whatever's on your mind, it's an open forum for you.
Nothing. I'm feeling
nothing. Good. You got that
ready, ready to talk some hockey, you know?
Rousing start.
Been a busy week, and good to see you guys. And I mean, I do like this, the ability to see your faces kind of makes it feel more like we're in the studio as opposed to doing it like we're on the phone.
Yeah.
So I kind of like that aspect of it. Of course, I have to look at your faces, so that's not so pleasant, but. But I get to look at mine too, so it's all right.
There's some good with the bad. So let's get started. You mentioned talking some hockey. Winnipeg Jets, little bit of Jets news, or Jets organizational news, I'll say, this week. They had a couple of signings. The first one was 2017 sixth-round draft pick, Arvid Holm, a goaltender. He's been based out of Sweden, so we haven't had a chance to see him here in North America. Put up some decent numbers in the Swedish Hockey League this past year, 20-10-0. 2.27 goals against average, a 915 save percentage. So the numbers sound good. And, you know, if you had to pinpoint an area of concern, I think organizationally with the Jets or with the True North organization, the goaltending depth maybe wasn't as deep as you'd like it. It seems like Arvid Holm is going to come in, and I'm going to imagine he's probably going to be the number one guy next year in Jacksonville at the ECHL level whenever that next year begins. But it's another late round draft pick for the Winnipeg Jets that the organization obviously feels that they might have discovered a bit of a diamond in the rough and signed him to that entry level deal, Dave.
Again, we've only seen him when he was here at development camp, I think last year. And so, I mean, you don't really get a big feel for what a guy's capable of doing. And you're right, Drew, reports out of Sweden were that he did well in a backup role there. My guess would be he probably plays in Sweden next year as well. That's just a guess. I don't know, but I'm especially with all the uncertainty surrounding sports here in North America, you know, for him to be able to challenge for that top role in Sweden might be better for his development than doing, you know, waiting for the leagues here in North America to get underway. So I would be more inclined to think that he would stay in Sweden next year. Of course, we don't know. And, I think the reality is that, you know, the fact is the Jets' depth in goal is decent. I think they've got, you know, you've got Hellebuck, who's going to be your number one goaltender for years to come. Mm-hmm. You've got Brassois, who potentially could, you know, re-sign within the organization. You've got Comrie, who potentially, you know, he's on a one-way next year. So he's, you know, a potential backup option if they don't re-sign Brassois. You've got Burden, who's going to likely be the top guy in the American Hockey League next year. And then you've got like Logan Neaton, who's still obviously in college. You've got Arvid Holm. You've got other guys who seem capable. So I think from a goaltending position, it's going to be a position of strength, especially, like I said, with it's healthily solidified with Connor Hellebuck.
Yeah, and home is, Dave, is a pretty exciting prospect when you consider he's a sixth rounder, right? And obviously, you know, the Jets have had a lot of success in, you know, the fifth, sixth, seventh rounds, right? Like Hellebuck, we all know, is a fifth round pick, right? You know, funny story about Arvid Holm. I remember it like it was yesterday because the 2017 draft was the last draft that I was at, and I was broadcasting with Huss in a hotel room in Chicago because we weren't allowed on the floor just because of, you know, the agreements between, you know, the other network, right? And Paulie Edmonds was providing the coverage for TSN 1290 from United Center. And I remember when Arvid Holm was drafted, we couldn't even find anything on him, right? Like, you're searching, you know, Hockey DB, elite prospects, you know, Hockey Futures, stuff like that. And I remember when we were talking to Paulie, Huss and I mean, we really couldn't find much about Arvid Holm aside from, you know, his height and, you know, the last team he played for. He was a bit of a mystery. And, you know, Dave just mentioned, you know, Jets development camp, you know, shortly after that 2017 draft was the first time we saw him. But, you know, he's turned into a nice prospect and, you know, he's got some good size, you know, 6'3", 6'4". And, you know, Drew mentioned his numbers. You know, his numbers were very decent in the Swedish Hockey League. And, you know, this is obviously a guy that, you know, we've never seen play live. We've only, you know, watched video of him on YouTube. But, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Holm, I mean, if he turns out to be, you know, even a backup at the American Hockey League level, let alone, you know, ends up playing, you know, any significant time in the NHL with the Jets, that's absolutely, you know, the cherry on the top, right? Because when you're talking about a late round pick like him, I mean, the expectation is that, you know, you're hoping that he might play one day in the NHL. But, you know, Dave mentioned that, you know, he might play in Sweden. He's only 21 years old, guys. I mean, he's very young, right? 21, 22 years old. So, I mean, a guy that I think, you know, we'll keep an eye on. But, you know, obviously, you know, he could end up being one of those late round steals. And we know, like we said before, the Jets have had a lot of success with some of those goalies in late rounds, Burton included.
Well, you remember that the Jets, you know, when they lost Comrie on waivers to the Coyotes, I think that was the first team that took Eric Comrie in his circus of a season that he had. The Jets organizational depth in goal was very thin. I mean, you had Hellebuck, obviously, and Brossois, and then you had Burton. And then after that, it was a really big question mark. You know, losing Comrie caused a little bit of consternation in the organization for how you were going to deal with any injuries. Now, fortunately, for the Jets, you know, Hellebuck and Brossois were healthy all year, so they didn't have to call anybody up. I mean, I guess Comrie or would have been the first call up after the Jets reacquired him, but maybe would have been Burton. But in any event, just adding another piece to the organizational depth that is important, that every team needs, so that you're not scrambling, that you're not going around and you're desperate for it. And obviously, the Jets see something in Holm that they wanted to allocate one of their 50 contracts to him, because we saw it just a couple weeks ago with the two players the Jets chose not to sign to contracts, that you know there's only so many to go around, and the Jets obviously think that in Arvid Holm, that 2017 sixth round pick, that he might be a diamond in the rough that could develop if/when he comes over to North America and be a member of the organization. So again,
Jared Moe is another guy
that I forgot.
Jared Moe was a sixth rounder in 2018. I mean, he just put up pretty good numbers with the University of Minnesota, right? Like, so we're talking about like three or four goaltenders here, you know, that have a good opportunity to play with the Moose. So it's you know, pretty incredible that, you know, the Jets have not only managed to, you know, find these guys in late rounds, but they're following that nice, you know, development curve, right? So yeah, Arvid Holm is an intriguing one for sure, because, you know, when you watch some highlights, he looks very solid, and, you know, you look at his numbers and they're very good. So, you know, you wonder if, you know, a couple of years from now, he might be, you know, in that number two role for the Moose.
Time will tell, obviously, on that front. And you mentioned the development curve. Well, that takes us back to the 2018 development camp, where the Jets extended an invite to a guy with a last name that was familiar to us, that being Reichel, his father being Robert Reichel. You remember him, of course, as a member of the Calgary Flames back in the day.
Christian Canada drew in the 1998 Olympics in Nagano. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
How could you forget, right?
You can't. I drove a stake through the heart of an entire country almost. But his son, Christian Reichel, who's been playing with the Moose for the last 2 years, an undrafted free agent, This is a testament to never giving up and to scratching and clawing your way, because he's now signed an entry level deal with the Winnipeg with the Jets organization after a couple seasons with Manitoba Moose. Now, Dave, you've probably watched Christian Reichel more than anybody in the city almost. You know, were you surprised that he got this contract, this entry level deal, the 2-year entry level deal? And what can you tell us about Christian Reichel and his game?
No, in fact, at the end of the season, when the AHL season was canceled, I did like a recap of the season, just kind of looking at it from the perspective of kind of breaking down, you know, some of the individual stories that had happened. And what I wrote about Christian Reichel at the time was, he's not a player I would be surprised to see get a contract soon enough, because he's a hardworking player. You know, he played 55 games in his first year as a pro with the Moose. He turned 2 1-year contract AHL deals into this ELC, which is pretty impressive. And, you know, I talked to Moose head coach Pascal Vincent today, which will be on Leo Curve in the next couple of days, because I have a bunch of different articles. And one of the players we talked about was Christian Reichel. And I said, like, to him, I said, you know, one of the things that we talk about is, you know, you need an opportunity. We also have to work to get that opportunity. And he talked about Reichel's, he called it competitive intelligence. And he talked about how hard, and you see it. And like, he had 12 goals in 39 games this year with the Moose. He had some injury problems after game 4. He missed about 2.5 months of the season, but he came back, played pretty well. And Pascal talked about the idea of him playing with limited minutes, but not complaining, working with what he was given. So he was given, you know, 8-10 minutes a game. And you know, he doesn't like to use lines, fourth line, third line, but he was on the fourth line, you know, or the third line. And that's what he was allocated. And that's what he was given. And then when opportunity presented itself, you know, he gave an opportunity to play with Christian Vesalainen and David Gustafson. That was the last 4 games of the season before the AHL season was paused. He was also playing with CJ.
Like a year ago.
What's that?
Seems like a year ago.
Yeah, it does. It feels like it was ages ago. But no, he was given the opportunity to play with those guys. I mean, his shooting percentage was insane. He scored 12 goals on almost 19.7% shooting percentage. And he's a hardworking kid. And you know what? He's worked really hard for this opportunity. And you just get the sense that he is a player that they like. You know, there's been a number of articles about him in the last few days about talking about how, you know, I think Scott Billick of the Winnipeg Sun had one talking about how the Jets feel they got a steal with him because they didn't have to draft him, but he's a good player. And again, he's just a hardworking guy who's taking advantage of his opportunities. And I wouldn't be surprised next year, of course, whenever that is, to see him playing on a top line with, you know, David Gustafson and Christian Vesalainen, if that's the way it bears out in to start the 2020-21 season. Because again, Pascal seemed to like what those three had. And again, we don't know what it's going to bring, but we know that Reichel is going to work on whatever he needs to work on to keep getting better, keep improving. And I'm not saying he's going to be an NHL player, but it, you know, as let's put it this way, the line, I don't want to butcher it. So I got it here right now. He said, I'm not going to bet against them. And I agree with that. I honestly, like, you see the players who, and you know, and the example I used with him, and he seemed to agree with me, was that like the Mason Appleton, Jansen Harkin, guys who started with the Moose on the fourth line and work their way up to a top line position and then eventually the Jets. Can Reichel do that? I don't know. He seems to have quite a few tools. He's got some things that he's got to work on. But you know what? He for a player that they basically got for free, I mean, what a nice opportunity, even if he just becomes a really good AHL player. But they have a chip player who could potentially be a winger, you know, in the NHL.
Like, to your point, Dave, again, undrafted free agent, you bring him in from dev camp. He played 1 year in the Western Hockey League, I believe, before the Jets brought him into development camp. He's only 22 years old. Like you said, 12 goals, all those goals, albeit with an unrealistic shooting percentage, they all came at even strength.
Yeah.
So it's not like he's succeeded. This isn't, you know, special teams driven. You know, if you can score 5-on-5, and sure, it might be inflated to a fairly good percentage. Right now, it seems like it's worth a shot in the dark, and this is a guy you've seen, and you want to see a little bit more of him. And obviously, to your conversation with Pascal Vincent, Pascal was quite pleased with his development over the course of the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, and again, like I said, you know, that's, he talks about like guys not being given anything. And I think that's pretty like important within the organization. that idea of like, it doesn't matter if you're a first round pick or if you're an undrafted player, if you can take advantage of the opportunity that's in front of you and you do it, then you're going to get the reward of continuing to have a big role within the organization. So it doesn't matter if you're, you know, first round draft pick Christian Vesalainen or undrafted Christian Reichel, you know, right now you're both on that top line for the Manitoba Moose, being given an opportunity to be a winger, you know, for the Jets farm club. So I just think it's just a testament. That was one of my first comments when I saw the news, was that it's just a testament to hard work.
Speaking of your conversation with Pascal Vincent, and there's going to be a number of articles on illegalcurve.com in the next couple of days. Can you sort of, you know, what did you guys talk about? What can people expect to see in those articles and the conversation you and Pascal had?
We talked about a few things. We talked about the retirement of Peter Stojkovic, obviously the captain of the Manitoba Moose, Winnipegger, you know, played 5 seasons here for the Moose, a last ever draft pick of the Atlanta Thrashers in 2010. So we talked about that. We talked about Pascal potentially being the assistant coach with the Winnipeg Jets, what that might look like for him. I said, it's funny, we often talk to you about your players getting a call and how excited you are for them, but now you're potentially going to get a recall up to the NHL. So that's a bit of an unusual role for you. And then we just talked about the development of Christian Reichel. We talked about Christian Vesalainen, David Gustafson, that pair. And then lastly, we talked about the young defenseman who could be with the Manitoba Moose and what that might mean. Dylan Sandberg, Villian Ola, you know, Leon Gavanke, Jonathan Kovacevic. The name goes on. Like Logan Stanley, a third-year pro, is like an old guy at this point. So quite a bit of conversation, and you always get a lot of really good answers. So that'll all be on illegalcurve.com.
And Dave, I know that Pascal doesn't like to talk about himself, but, you know, all the players that you're mentioning, we talked a little bit about it earlier. I mean, Pascal has had his hand in a lot of these players, right? Since he moved from, you know, assistant coach with the Jets to the head coach of the Moose, right? Like, you're talking about all these players. I mean, you go back to Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Jansen Harkins, Mason Appleton, you know, now David Gustafson, Christian Vesalainen, right? Like, yeah.
Jansen Harkins. The list goes on and on.
I mentioned Harkins.
Sorry, I didn't. Yeah. I missed that one.
Come on, Drew, you're not paying attention here.
Well, when you start talking, I generally tune you out.
I'm just saying, Pascal is an excellent coach, and I don't think any of us would be surprised if he's back in the NHL, you know, real soon. And the nice thing for Pascal is, even though the AHL season, you know, was canceled, I mean, he now has to, you know, luckily can look forward, you know, to that Jets Flames series. So that's awesome news for Pascal.
Exactly right. I want to make mention, of course, a big thank you to our sponsors here on the Illegal Curvecast, our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. They're open. Big Daddy Taz is going to be performing all week there. And next week, an individual comedian who once portrayed fake Drew Mindell, Benji Rothman, our good buddy, is going to be performing at Rumors. So you can get tickets for that at rumorscomedyclub.com. Also want to give a shout out to our friends at Bernstein's Deli. They're back open, socially distant, of course. They're following all the COVID rules and regulations, but the restaurant's open, the grocery store's open. Check them out, get some good stuff. Either eat in or take home, all available. All the information at bernsteinsdeli.com.
And I was actually golfing with Aaron, Drew. Sorry to cut you off.
Uh-huh.
Golfing with Aaron from Bernstein's Deli on Saturday, and he was nice enough to give me a couple of Bernstein's Deli branded golf balls, and those were lost within the first three holes.
I'm not surprised. I mean, I'll tell you what, Izzy, you and I played a little bit on, Monday night? That was Monday night. You were hitting the ball, you know, straight down the middle, 200 yards plus every time. Yeah. Izzy looks like he's ready for the tour.
Yeah, I was playing my grandpa golf. Nice 175 down the middle straight. That's the way I play.
I don't know if you, when the last time you golfed with Ezzy was, Dave, but.
I don't know if we've ever golfed together, actually.
Yeah, we did. Remember with Bruce?
That's right, with Bruce. You guys golfed there. But for those of you who've never had the opportunity to golf.
Bruce Springsteen, that is, for people.
Of course, yeah. Because Ezzy has the back of a geriatric 85-year-old, he can't swing hard. And as he also doesn't need to swing hard, because, you know, I believe the word in Yiddish is zaftik. So he's a big boy, a big strong boy. He can take his nice little calm, easy swing where his back doesn't really rotate at all. And he just pokes it right down the fairway, 200 yards plus, right down the middle. As he was on fire, I'm glad we weren't playing for money, because the big man was hitting fairways and shooting for the pin on each and every hole.
Yeah, you were playing pretty well yourself, Drew. It was fun just to get out there. I mean, you know that. we don't get, you know, to golf as much as we would like. So yeah, it was, you know, just a nice night, you know, as long as you get a couple good shots in there. I mean, I'm terrible, so I don't really have high expectations. It was just nice to get out there.
Speaking of terrible, how was that for a segue? Speaking of terrible, the Buffalo Sabres are in the news in this week in the NHL as really out of nowhere. What was that, yesterday, 2 days ago? The days all blend together, I'm not even sure anymore. They've decided to dismiss general manager Jason Botterill and basically their entire scouting staff. And I'm not just talking about...
Have you ever seen anything like that in any pro sport?
No.
It's absolutely incredible. Like 22 members of the team, Mike Harrington, our good friend of the Buffalo News, you know, confirmed. Actually, at one point it was 23 because they rehired their IT guy.
They accidentally fired the IT guy. I don't know how you accidentally fire somebody, but they quickly withdrew that firing.
Well, he had all the passwords, Drew. They needed him.
They need the password guy. So they kept the IT guy around, but they fired absolutely everybody else in. I mean, it's a house cleaning, and it's a cost cutting measure. And there's almost two different issues at play here. There's the dismissal of Jason Botterill, basically 3 weeks after owner Kim Pegula gave him a vote of confidence. They said that, you know, he was going to be back for another season after a disappointing year in Buffalo, where even with these expanded playoffs, they still weren't able to be one of the top 24 teams. And then they reverse course 3 weeks later. I mean, look, they've gone through Jason Botterill. They've gone through Tim Murray before him. We know that the tank that they were trying to tank for McDavid, it didn't work. They got Eichel, which is a pretty good, a consolation prize. But if you're a fan of the Buffalo Sabres, how do you have any faith in the ownership and in the management of the Pegulas, given everything that's gone on?
No, it's ridiculous. And, you know, Pierre LeBrun wrote about this in The Athletic. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago. I mean, 3 years is not enough time for a GM. I mean, he references in the article, LeBrun that is, he says that, you know, most hockey people think a GM needs at least 5 years, right? So obviously, guys, everybody's going to point to the Ryan O'Reilly trade and they're going to say that was a horrible trade, and they're not wrong.
No,
but you look at what Jason Botterill did, though, you know, in the 2019 offseason, and, you know, getting Henry Jokiharju from Chicago for Alex Nylander, right? Bringing in Colin Miller from the Vegas Golden Knights. He acquired Connor Sheary, who obviously he had that relationship with in Pittsburgh. Sheary obviously got traded back to Pittsburgh, but some of those moves, guys, were really good moves. And the Jeff Skinner contract, I mean, if you read, you know, Mike Harrington today in the Buffalo News, he talks about how Jason Botterill was a little bit, you know, hesitant to sign Jeff Skinner to that contract. Like, he would have been more comfortable with 4 or 5 years as opposed to 7 years. So you can't really say that the Jeff Skinner contract and, you know, the subpar year that Skinner had was Jason Botterill's fault. So, I mean,
sorry to interrupt there, but apparently ownership was the one, the Pegulas, were the ones who insisted on getting Skinner done at, what was it, 8 years at $9 million per season?
I think it was. I thought it was seven, but yeah, it could have been eight. It was seven or eight, yeah.
Something very close to that, and it was a contract. I remember when they announced it and we talked about it on air, and we all sort of said, "This isn't a good contract." We knew immediately, and then Skinner's numbers plummeted almost immediately after he signed the deal. To be honest, he had a terrible year, and this is ownership, you know, not letting their general manager run things the way he wants to, forcing his hand, making him do things, and then being upset with him when those things don't work out.
It's one thing to fire Jason Botterill, but it's another thing. First off, you know, Dave knows this from covering the American Hockey League. Chris Taylor is a great hockey coach, and the Rochester Americans were actually having a really good year, and they would have gone to the playoffs. Chris Taylor is a very highly regarded guy, even a guy that, you know, was even talked about as possibly being either an NHL assistant coach or an NHL head coach. And then you go on to the amateur scouting staff. I mean, you've got the NHL draft lottery coming up next week. You've got a draft coming up. You know, we think it's going to be in October. We don't exactly know when it's going to be. And the Sabres are going to have, at the very worst, you know, the seventh overall pick. So, I mean, just unbelievable the amount of firings that we saw this week from Buffalo.
And with that, we'll talk more about the Sabres a little bit later on. We're pleased to welcome to the program from theathletic.com. He covers the Vegas Golden Knights, our good friend Jesse Granger. Jesse, good evening. Thanks so much for joining us. How are things in Vegas?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Things are pretty good down here. I mean, considering everything that's going on right now. Yeah, things are starting to open back up slowly at minimal capacity, but at least things are starting to kind of get back towards normal. At least there's some sports to talk about. They haven't played them yet, but at least we can talk about them.
That's right. We're getting close to being able to consider talking about being able to play them. So that's a step in the right direction. And Jesse, before we get into the nuts and bolts, and again, we thank you for joining us here on the Illegal Curve Curvecast. I got to say, you have the best setup going on behind you right there. That is a guy who's done some video hits over the last little while. That's with that good setup you've got behind.
Look at the bobbleheads, Jesse. You've got a lot of good bobbleheads there.
Thank you. Thank you. This is the product of 3 months stuck in my house with nothing to do. I had just moved into the new house right before all the quarantining and everything. So I've spent quite a bit of time on the home office. So thank you, guys.
That's good. You got all the boxes unpacked then. You got no excuses if you got if there's boxes that stay packed up for the next 3 or 5 years, you have no excuses at that point.
Right.
Yeah. Well, anyways, Jesse, we do appreciate you joining us. As I mentioned, we want to bring you on, talk about the restart of the NHL, which is hopefully, you know, maybe training camp 3 weeks away, you know, an expected announcement of the hub cities sometimes in the next week or 10 days. So you mentioned things in Vegas are beginning to open up. And you know, so maybe just sort of walk us through what the current COVID situation is on the ground in Vegas. Is, you know, are the numbers dropping? Because we hear about spikes in Florida, spikes in Texas, things like that. What's on the ground in Vegas right now?
Yeah, so I think Vegas handled it pretty well from the very, very beginning and shut things down pretty quickly in comparison to a lot of other cities. And that allowed it to stay pretty low here, again, in relation to most places. But since things have opened, the numbers have actually started going back up. Not as quickly as they were the first time around, but it's definitely a cause for concern. So they opened the casinos, and I think they thought the crowds coming to the casinos would be a little slower than they have been. And it's been they can't open enough hotel rooms to keep all these people happy now. So I think that has surprised people, the appetite for coming to Vegas. I think that when they opened the casinos, they weren't expecting the appetite to be quite as big as it has been. And I think that may be leading to the numbers going up a little bit. And if I'm the NHL, I'm definitely watching those numbers. And right now, like I said, they're not going up crazy amounts, but it's definitely something to keep their eye on.
And Jesse, it's no secret that, you know, Las Vegas is the front runner right now to be one of the hub cities. And I know that, you know, you've been covering that for The Athletic, and we thought that we might even hear that Las Vegas was officially a hub city as early as this week. And then the NHL came out and said that, you know, it's not a guarantee that it's going to be Las Vegas, even though I think you'd agree most people still think it is going to be Vegas. And then it's possibly going to be Toronto as the other hub city. But is there any indication that, you know, we might find out that it is officially Las Vegas, or does that maybe hinge on, you know, the other hub city? I imagine that the NHL wants to announce the hub cities, you know, the two of them at the same time.
Yeah, probably, you'd think. And I think, obviously, the issues with the 14-day quarantine in Canada are probably what's holding them up from announcing a Toronto or a Vancouver or wherever they decide if it's a Canadian city. And I think, again, I think the NHL is doing this the right way. And there are so many other hoops they have to jump through to play hockey. There are so many other things that have to be decided. I think they can wait on the hub cities because they don't need a lot of runway to get those things ready. I think they can get it ready pretty soon. And I think the longer you wait, the closer you are to the games being played when you make that decision, the best information you have available when it comes to COVID. And I think everything's important, but I think that's the most important thing because all these cities can host this. Some may, like Vegas may have some things that other cities don't, but I think all 10 of those cities can host these games without an issue. So I think the longer you wait, the better information you have. And I think that's that they're doing it the right way.
So Jesse, question for you is, have they figured out which hotel it's going to be? Like, has Vegas kind of, have they been, I know obviously there's probably various discussions, but like I had heard something about Mandalay Bay. So is there any kind of front runner amongst the big hotels in Vegas?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the MGM sent a proposal to the NHL with everything mapped out, how they would do it. But I think the actual hotels that they're going to use, I think that's kind of been a floating target. It's not exactly nailed down because you heard Mandalay Bay. That was probably for me. I initially reported that that was the plan.
I think it was you.
Yeah, very early on in the process. And at that point in the process, it seemed like none of the casinos were going to be open anytime soon. And at that point, I think the MGM was saying, okay, Mandalay Bay is the best property for this thing, so let's do that. And then the numbers went down faster. The governor opened things up and they opened a few casinos and they still kept Mandalay Bay closed. It wasn't one of the initial ones to open. But because, like I said, the demand was much higher than they were expecting, they've now since opened up Mandalay Bay. So that pretty much, you would think, probably takes Mandalay Bay out of the conversation. I've heard Park MGM, which is the one everyone talks about because it's closed and it's right next to T-Mobile Arena, like literally in front of it. But from what I've heard, the NHL Players Association, they prefer the non-gambling properties, and partially because they're non-gambling and also because the few non-gaming properties near T-Mobile Arena also happen to be like the nicest hotels on the strip. So that doesn't hurt. So there's a whole kind of group of them. Vidara is one. I'm trying to remember what it used to be called, the Mandarin Oriental, and then they changed it to, I forgot what the name of it is. But anyways, that's the one right next to the Vidara. I think those are probably the ones that the players would prefer, and maybe that's the ones they're targeting. Again, they're close enough to T-Mobile to where it would work. But like I said, I don't think they have the hotel decided, because if I'm GM, and I would love to have hockey here, and it's great, but if you're telling me I can open this casino and fill it with people and that's the option, or have hockey, I think I'd rather fill my casino and make millions of dollars. So that's kind of why it's still a moving target.
Jesse Granger of The Athletic is our guest here on the Illegal Curve cast. Jesse, of course, covers the Golden Knights for The Athletic. And so you talk about the influx of people into Vegas. These, I presume, were into the casinos, rather. I presume these aren't necessarily just locals. These are people traveling from all around the United States as if there wasn't a global pandemic going on. Am I right in that?
Right, yeah. And again, these casinos are not full. They're fuller than they expected them to be, but I just drove past the strip. I live out in Summerlin, so I don't really go through the strip all that often, but yesterday I drove through the strip and it still looks like a ghost town. I mean, compared to what it's normally looks like. But and they've got a lot of precautions with glass and all the people at the blackjack tables and all kinds of crazy stuff like that. But yes, it is a lot of tourists and a lot of locals too, but I think you're right. There are tourists coming here, and that's why if I'm the NHL, yeah, Vegas is great, but if you have to keep a good close eye on those numbers as things open up, because I think Vegas could go from perfect to ruled out very quickly.
Well, because, you know, you always the NBA and the NHL are obviously the two comparables, and you read about the NBA's proposal, which was publicized earlier this week, and they're talking about using Walt Disney World and everything else. But it really seems like they're trying to, that there won't be that sort of tourist function associated with the NBA's return to play program. Whereas it seems it would be increasingly difficult for the NHL to keep the bubble as tight as the NBA's bubble is going to be. And that just seems like it leads to, is going to lead to problems or potential problems.
It could be. I will say that even if every casino on the strip, except for the one the players are at, is open, I feel like enough bubble. I mean, those casinos are massive and there's a lot of hotel rooms. They can spread the players out. They can live in that hotel. If they're staying in a hotel that is open for the public, then that's where there are issues. But as long as they've got T-Mobile Arena, all the arena, because MGM owns so many arenas here, they've got all that owned and shut down and held just for the NHL. I think they could do it similar to Orlando, because the city of Orlando is not shut down, just Disneyland or Disney World is, right?
Exactly right. Jesse Granger of The Athletic, our guest here on the Illegal Curvecast, talking about Vegas as a potential hub for the NHL if it returns to play or when it returns to play. And of course, the Golden Knights are going to be in one of the top four spots battling for that round robin alongside the Colorado Avalanche, the St. Louis Blues, and the Dallas Stars. Are the Golden Knights at an advantage or at a disadvantage, given that they certainly don't know those teams as well as the Stars, Avs, and Blues know one another?
I honestly don't know. And it's this, anybody who thinks they know what's going to happen when we start playing hockey is wrong. I'm telling, I have no idea what's going to happen. I think that the have struggled against those teams this year and the last couple of years, particularly like they've never beat St. Louis in regulation in franchise history. So they've won the last two games in overtime with dramatic comebacks, but they've really struggled with St. Louis. Colorado beat them twice this year, and I think it was 6-1 and 7-3. So the Golden Knights definitely have some matchup issues with those top teams. But that was also, most of those matchups were early in the year when the Golden Knights were really struggling, and not since Pete DeBoer has been the coach. And since Pete DeBoer has been the coach, I think they're like 2-0 against those teams. So there's some positives and some negatives, but I definitely think it's the Golden Knights would rather be playing the Pacific Division, which is how the playoffs would normally go. They've dominated most of the opponents in that division. So I think this is definitely a tougher road for them than it would have been if it would have been the standard setup.
Jesse, I wanted to ask you about the buzz there in Las Vegas, because I imagine Golden Knights fans specifically are excited about the possibility of Vegas being a hub city and, you know, hosting all of these NHL teams. But it's also an unprecedented situation, right? Like we're in, you know, mid-June here, and I imagine it's, you know, 95 or 100 degrees right there right now in Vegas. But is there a buzz there in Vegas? Like are Golden Knights fans really excited about this? Because as we talked about earlier, I mean, the expectation is that it's going to be Vegas. It's just a formality at this point, and we're just really, you know, waiting on that second city, which, you know, could very well be Toronto.
Yeah, it's actually strange to me how much it, like, this city wants it to, like, not just this city, all the cities, because when I tweet that something about positive about Vegas being a hub city, the fans of from the other cities are furious about it. Like, they're not, like, no one's going to be allowed in these games, so it really doesn't matter where they play them for the fans, at least I wouldn't think so, but no, it has surprised me. An unusual amount of people really want their city to be the hub city. And I think Vegas, it might just be because people here are used to, like, every event is in Vegas. Like, they get it. Vegas gets everything. So it's just, I don't know if it's like a point of pride of the city or whatever, but they, like, we host events. That's what Vegas does. So I think a lot of people just think, yeah, of course, Vegas should do it.
Jesse, the other kind of big news with regards to the organization is the Henderson Silver Knights being moving to Nevada now. And I mean, it's such an, the AHL, I mean, I cover the AHL here in Winnipeg for the Manitoba Moose, but like the AHL is such an interesting league, right? So you got a team, Vegas has got their team in Chicago, or, you know, they don't own the team, obviously, purchased the Rampage, moved them to Henderson. Now they're setting up their whole team. So like, what's the buzz like there? Because now you're really going to have a lot more control over your prospects than they would if they were the way they were previously, which is under the Chicago Wolves banner.
Right. Yeah. The first thing that I thought of when the first time I ever heard anyone mention the thought of AHL in Vegas was, I was like, man, that might be a little ambitious. I know they're selling the NHL stadium arena out every single night and they're having no issues with it, but I just don't know if this isn't a massive city. It's about 2 million, the whole metro area, but then I found out that the actual initial reason that they wanted to move this team here wasn't for to sell tickets and to make money and as a business decision. It was George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon came up with this idea and brought it to Bill Foley and basically said, hey, I think we can fill this arena enough and this will significantly give us advantages in the hockey ops department that teams that don't have their two teams in the same city do. And you guys obviously know about that up there, the advantages of being able to send guys up and down just for salary cap reasons. And I don't know how closely you guys followed it, but the Golden Knights definitely did that this year. Poor Nick Waugh had like, I think 36 transactions from AHL to NHL this year. And so they can do that without actually shipping guys back and forth and they have fresher guys to play. And Pete DeBoer has mentioned that he thinks it's going to be so much better because these guys who get one call up and if you don't play well in this game, it might be the only game you get that year. It's going to be so much easier for those guys to give it their all and show what they're worth in that shot when they're not jet lagged, two time zones over, slept on a plane last night. So it's just good for the organization. And I think, I mean, they've sold more season ticket deposits than you can fit in the arena. So that is, I mean, they're doing well on the business side, surprisingly well. But I think the motive to bring this team here was really the advantages it gives you on the hockey ops side.
Jesse Granger is our guest on the Illegal Curvecast. Jesse covers the Vegas Golden Knights for theathletic.com. So, Jesse, pretend your phone rings, and as you mentioned, the Golden Knights head coach, Peter DeBoer, is on the other line, and he's saying to you, Jesse, game one of the round robin, game one of the playoffs, should I start Marc-Andre Fleury, or should I start Robin Leonard? What do you tell him?
Oh, this is my favorite debate. I'm a Fleury guy. I thought Fleury should be the starter. Now, when I say Fleury should be the starter, that doesn't mean if he struggles, I wouldn't put Leonard in, because you can't waste a goalie that good on the bench. But I think this should be Fleury's job. And I thought that before the stoppage, but now that we've had this 3 months off, and it's going to be unprecedented. No player is going to be comfortable in these situations, because it's just going to be so different from anything they've ever done. I really think I want Fleury in it now, because Leonard, he's been statistically superior the last couple seasons. There's no arguing that, but he's also, and it's not his fault that he hasn't played in playoff games. He played for some struggling franchises early in his career. It wasn't necessarily he wasn't the reason they weren't in the playoffs, but nevertheless, the guy's only played two playoff series. He's been through past his first round once, and then he got swept by Carolina that year with the Islanders. Whereas Marc-Andre Fleury's played in, I think, 138 playoff games. He's won like almost 80 of them, top five, I think, all time in both. I think I'd rather, in a situation where nobody's comfortable, I think Marc-Andre Fleury will settle the troops. I think the players are comfortable knowing he's back there. And then if he doesn't play well, you have the luxury of another starting goalie that you can plug in and see if he can do any better.
Well, you know, you just mentioned that, Jesse, and, you know, we should give your article a plug in The Athletic on Monday. And, you know, you were, you know, bang on, I thought, because, I mean, I remember when we were still on air, you know, talking about that acquisition by the Golden Knights. First of all, we thought that the Golden Knights were going to have to give up a first rounder, not just a second rounder. Obviously, you know, they gave up Malcolm Subban and I forget the name of the prospect.
Slava Demin.
Slava Demin, right. And so they did give up, you know, a couple of, you know, roster players, but I mean, at least future roster players. But I guess the question I had for you is, you know, there aren't that many teams who have two number one goalies, right? Like when you talk about the Jets, you know, Connor Hellebuyck obviously is a Vezina favorite right now, but if he struggles, you know, in a best of five series, Lauren Brossoit isn't going to, you know, strike fear into the opposing team like a Robin Leonard would, right? So,
right.
Doesn't that just make the Golden Knights, you know, one of the more dangerous teams in the Western Conference? Because if Marc-Andre Fleury in that first round struggles and you're able to put Robin Leonard in the second game, it kind of reminds you actually of, you know, 2018 with Philip Grubauer and Braden Holtby, right? Grubauer struggled and then Braden Holtby went in game three and, you know, the rest is history. The Caps won the cup.
Right. I think what it went into this decision was George McPhee, Kelly McCrimmon, the Golden Knights looked at the way their team had played. And if you look at the numbers at 5-on-5, shots, attempts difference, Corsi difference, shot share, goal share, expected goal share, scoring chance share, any possession number you can look at, the Golden Knights are first in the NHL in every single one of them. And they thought, if we play this way, the only way we don't win the Stanley Cup is if goaltending doesn't show up. And I think they trust in Marc-Andre Fleury, but they're sitting there saying, we can win the Stanley Cup as long as goaltending is good. What if he gets hurt and Malcolm Subban has to go in there and we don't trust him and we just wasted a season because the goaltender got hurt? So I think they thought, let's protect ourselves from a Marc-Andre Fleury injury. Or at the time, Marc-Andre Fleury was really struggling. Now, he turned it around after that. After the trade deadline, he was awesome. But at the time, he was struggling. So you look at it, and it's like, man, if he can't turn it around, if age finally caught up to him, what a waste this season would be. So I think it was just insurance. And then, like you said, they didn't have to give up a first-round pick. They only had to give up a second. So they thought, you know what, I think that's a reasonable price to pay for some really good insurance for a team that we think can win with good goaltending.
Have to ask you about, we're a Winnipeg-based show. Got to ask about the Winnipeg who got the new deal in Vegas, Ryan Reeves, 2 years.
Yeah.
What was kind of the motivation of that with that signing, and what was the reaction in the from the fan base about Reeves signing for another 2 years?
Yeah, I think it was expected that he was going to be back. Ryan Reeves loves it here. He's kind of set up job here, started his brewing company out here with an actual brick and mortar brewery in Vegas. He's in every ad you turn on local TV, he's like telling people to only water 3 days a week because of the drought, and like he's all over. So he wants to be and here.
To drink more beer instead.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Save water, drink my beer. So everyone kind of expected him to be back. I think people expect, and I expected him to be back a little cheaper, not a lot. Like I was expecting maybe $1.25 million, and they went $1.75 million a year, which is, I think, a slight overpay. But I think they're willing to overpay because he's a unique player. There aren't many of him. I think there are a lot of fourth liners in this league that are maybe better than Ryan Reeves, but there are a million of them, and you can find them in the AHL. You can find them anywhere. And Ryan Reeves, he does something that not a lot of guys do. And I think Kelly McCrimmon values that. And I think Pete DeBoer values that. So they were willing to maybe slightly overpay for a guy who has led the league in hits for the last 2 years.
Jesse Granger, our guest on the Illegal Curve Curvecast. Jesse, of course, covers the Golden Knights for theathletic.com. Jesse, with this unprecedented three-month pause, Pete DeBoer's had some opportunity to sort of revamp things or retool things. And one of the things that he would need to retool, as you alluded in an article, is the Golden Knights penalty kill. I believe, 27th in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken, when the break happened, and it had been struggling. So how does he go about doing that? What needs to improve on the Golden Knights penalty kill for it to at least not be the laggard that it was on the team?
Yeah, and they were 27th in the league. That's for the whole season. And I think in the last 20 games, they were dead last, and it was a pretty wide margin between them and the second worst team. They really struggled on the penalty kill, even during, I think they were 10-2-1 during that stretch, but they still, almost every goal they gave up was on the PK. And it's weird because you look at their roster makeup, and they've got a bunch of forwards that you would think, how can this team possibly be bad at killing penalties? Mark Stone, William Karlsson, Riley Smith, Cody Eakin before they traded him to Winnipeg. They're really good PK forwards, and the defense aren't bad. And then they've obviously got Marc-Andre Fleury back there. So the makeup of the team suggests that they shouldn't be bad on the PK, but they just really, really had a hard time. And I think when Pete DeBoer came in, he changed a lot of things up. Obviously, they weren't doing great at killing penalties under Gallant. So DeBoer came in and tried to switch things up, and it just made things worse because guys weren't used to being in those spots. And I think there was a lot of mix-ups. We'll see if they fix it. I mean, I was just talking with Sean Shapiro, who covers the Stars for The Athletic, and I think this pause really helps the Stars and the Golden Knights when you look at these top Western Conference teams, because these coaches get a training camp with their team that they wouldn't have had. Bonus and DeBoer have never had training camps with their teams because they just took over midseason. So again, training camp, and maybe he can install some things that the players were having a hard time picking up while they were learning it on the fly when he first took over in January. So I think they need to be more aggressive. They need to not sit back in their shell quite as much. I think they need to let Riley Smith play with William Karlsson again. They split those two up about halfway through the season, inexplicably, when the guys were creating like a shorthanded chance almost every game. And since they split them up, the penalty kill hasn't been as good. So I think there are a few things they can do to try to fix it.
Jesse, just one last question. You know, you mentioned that, you know, this time, you know, especially with the training camp, is going to be very valuable to Vegas with a new coach, but also, and you wrote about this in The Athletic recently as well, the injuries to, you know, Winnipeg or Mark Stone and Max Pacioretty. I think some people forget, obviously everybody knows how good of a season Mark Stone was having, but also Max Pacioretty was on pace for a career high in points. And both of those guys were, I don't know if they were out, long-term, but I know that it was going to be at least a couple of weeks, and their status for the playoffs when this playoffs were originally supposed to start was a little bit, uncertain. But both of those guys are healthy, and I saw that they were skating down in Vegas as well. So when you think about that, I mean, this time off has been really beneficial to the Golden Knights because you're going to get, you know, two of your best forwards back as well.
Yeah, no, they definitely caught a huge break. It couldn't have come at a better time for them. Obviously, would have rather not had the NHL season paused. But for teams like the Avalanche, who were banged up, the Lightning were banged up, the Golden Knights obviously are benefiting from this. And you brought up probably the best two players on the team in Stone and Pacioretty. But also Alex Tuch has been banged up all year. And it seemed like he kept coming back a little too early and re-injuring it. And he was on his way back. And then right the game before the pause, he was supposed to make his return. And he had another setback. He had to fly back to Vegas. and he was just struggling to get on the ice. And now he told me this pause has been great for him. He didn't have to rush it. He's full. He feels better than he has all season. And he's a big time X factor for this team because their top six is awesome. Stone, Riley Smith, William Karlsson, Jonathan Marchessault, Pacioretty, Stastny, they're great. When this team struggles to put up points is when they don't get secondary scoring from the bottom six, and they've really struggled with that at times. And I think Alex Tuck can be that big weapon on that third line that can give them a little more balance, because when he's not in there or when he's in there and he's not producing, that's when this team shows its inconsistencies.
Jesse Granger covers the Vegas Golden Knights for theathletic.com. Of course, we recommend you subscribe to that fine publication, read some of Jesse's great work on the Jets Western Conference rival. Jesse's appearance here on the Illegal Curve Curvecast is brought to you by our friends at Linden Market Dental Center for all your dental needs. Now that this COVID pandemic is a little bit beyond us here in Winnipeg, you can get back to getting those teeth cleaned. You can check them out at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Jesse, appreciate your time this evening. Thanks so much for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you again live and in person rather than in these remote Curvecasts.
Definitely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Jesse. Take care. Appreciate it. There he goes. Jesse Granger joining us this evening on the Curvecast. Before Jesse jumped on with us, and great
interview. Anybody else just want to go to Vegas right now?
A little bit. Sounds like hotel rooms might be cheap. You know,
Vegas is a great town. The only problem is I'm not getting away from my family, so it's not happening, Dave.
Well, that's because what you get for having two children, Izzy. Yeah. That's your own fault for having two children.
We'll just set them up by the pool.
There you go. We'll be fine. You know, you can go cover the, you know, it's amazing that, yeah, it's sort of amazing that we're talking about Vegas not having one hockey team, but having two hockey teams in such a short time, 3 years. You know, you weren't sure if the Golden Knights, you know, experiment was going to work. And now it's worked so much that they have the AHL team there too. I mean, what a success story.
The NFL will be soon too, Drew.
Yeah, the NFL will be there. I mean, the stadium's ready. I mean, what a success
story. That stadium is phenomenal, by the way. I've never been inside it, but we drove, like when you go on the freeway, they take you by it.
Yeah.
And it's all black. Like it looks sick. It's just like, they did a really good job in that stadium.
Yeah, the Raider fan will certainly enjoy trashing a brand new stadium rather than the hellhole they've been playing in Oakland for the last number of years. We left off talking about the Sabres, and so I want to give, you know, you guys can each give normally I just say give me a final thought. Give me a final thought on the Buffalo Sabres, and then we can put a bow on this Thursday edition of the Curvecast. So, Ezzy, give me a final thought about the Buffalo Sabres or whatever else is on your mind.
Yeah, I don't know if a couple of minutes is enough to talk about the Buffalo Sabres. That's why it would be nice to have our regular 3-hour show, right, boys? But I just feel bad for Sabres fans, to be honest with you, because, you know, we talked about it earlier before we had Jesse Granger on. I mean, they didn't get Connor McDavid in 2015, but they got Jack Eichel. And in my opinion, he's a top 10 skilled forward in the entire league. And he's never been into the playoffs. And when you consider that, you know, the Sabres – you know, just fired not only Jason Botterill, but their entire scouting staff and player development and basically everybody, including the IT guy who they also rehired. I mean, with the draft lottery coming back, this isn't a very important time for the Sabres. I mean, they're going to have a high draft pick, but they're also going to have to make some, you know, pretty important decisions. Sam Reinhardt is a guy that they're going to have to sign. You know, he's a guy that, you know, for a top five pick, he probably, you know, hasn't produced at the level they would like, but I mean, they're going to have to make a decision on Rasmus Ristolainen, who it looks like they're going to keep, even though, you know, a lot of Sabres fans, you know, would have liked to have seen Ristolainen traded. But, you know, Dave, I think what it comes down to is, you know, I don't know if the Sabres are any better off today than they were before Jason Botterill was fired. Kevin Adams has no managerial experience at all. Yeah, he was a great NHL player, but he was running, you know, the hockey academy for the Harbor Center, right? So, I mean, Kevin Adams is a coach who, you know, went over to the business side. He's never been an assistant GM, and let alone a general manager. So you wonder, like, what is Kevin Adams going to be able to do here in between now and, you know, December or January, whenever the Sabres play again? So I just feel bad for Sabres fans, because even though they don't want to call it a rebuild, boys,
they're looks like a duck and walks like a duck, it's a duck.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that they're a long ways away. Sure, you have Eichel and, you know, Rasmus Dahlin is a great player and, you know, Casey Mittelstadt's a good player. You need a second-line center. I mean, Casey Mittelstadt is not a second-line center yet. I just think they have a lot of work to do, Dave. I think they're a long ways away from being a really good team.
I'll tell you who I'm most concerned about. Dwayne, the Sabres fan.
Sabres fan Dwayne.
Sabres fan Dwayne. He was angry, Dwayne.
Yeah.
Think about the rant he went on before this. What's he? I can only imagine what the encore is going to look like if people don't know what I'm talking about. Type in angry Sabres fan Dwayne. You'll hear his rant. We played it on our radio show back when we ate it. That?
February?
Hold on. I'll look it up quickly.
Did you guys happen to notice as well that Timu Nieminen was a scout with the Buffalo Sabres? That's Teppo's brother.
I noticed that. He actually retired
before he could be fired.
I didn't know that until someone wrote Teppo was better. But, by the way, angry fan Dwayne was end of January. So
there you go. You can find
Ezzie's 100% right. I mean, it's just you got to feel bad for the Sabres fans. I mean, they're probably the most dedicated fan base in the NHL. They've got the TV ratings. I think Buffalo is the number one ratings.
Local TV market.
Yeah, they're the number one TV market every single year. They're absolutely like tops, and you know they get dumped on like Winnipeg. Everybody rips on Buffalo. Ezzie and I were there in 2016 for the draft. And, you know, honestly, I thought it was a great city. I really enjoyed it there. We had a nice time, hung out with the guy from Super Troopers, kinda. And you know what? It's a fun. No, it's honestly it's a fun city. It's a nice arena. And
I've been there for a few. I've been there for a couple Bills games back in the day.
Yeah, so you just feel bad because I mean, what is it like? Someone was saying like Eichel's had three or four GMs, you know, all these coaches, different coaches. It's not just Eichel. It's the fan base. And you're sitting there going, when is it going to get better? And it just seems like, you know, it's interesting, right? The Pegulas took over in 2011, and there was so much promise in Buffalo. They just had a good season. And what's happened since? They haven't made the playoffs since, and they fire everybody. I think it was LeBron. Maybe I think LeBron tweeted it. They're paying Tim Murray for another 2 weeks, so Tim Murray is getting his last paycheck. I think June 30th, and you've got, you know, obviously Jason Botterill, Winnipegger, is going to be getting a paycheck from them for the next little bit. So you know, it's an unfortunate situation, and again, you know. Don't get me wrong. I don't think that things need to always be done the hockey way. Like, I don't have a problem. I mean, the Pegulas are the owners. They're the ones who are paying the bills. So at the end of the day, like, it's them who gets to make the decisions. And if they're not doing something the traditional way, as long as there's a thought process behind it, then I don't really have an issue with it. Like, I mean, it again, Ezzie's point, we've never seen anything like this before in the history of the NHL. But maybe they'll do something good out of it. Doesn't seem like it. And again, we're not in Buffalo, so we don't know. But I mean, everything I've read from the fan base is like their minds are blown right now. So I'm not suggesting that somehow this is something good is going to come out of 9 years of, you know, middling results. But who knows? I'm just saying, like, maybe they're going to try something different, try a leaner operation. We'll see how it goes. I mean, it's almost like it can't get worse, but you never know. Maybe it can.
Well, I think the, you know, from my perspective, it goes to show how much ownership and the culture that ownership instills does actually factor into a team's success. And that has been the problem that the Pegulas have had, particularly with the Buffalo Sabres, is that the culture that they've instilled there has not worked. And it has not worked in their hirings. It has not worked in their operations. It's not worked in how they've treated employees. If you read, I believe, Tim Graham, who used to be a columnist in Buffalo and now covers Buffalo for the Athletic, did a great expose about the Pegulas. Oh, gosh, it must have been 2-3 months ago. You can find it if you're an Athletic subscriber. And he just sort of went up and down how the Pegulas have been running the Buffalo Sabres. And you also keep in mind, they own the Buffalo Bills too. And, you know, the Bills, they've hired the right people and they seem as though they've left it alone. They've been hands off enough. You know, they got, they have the right people in charge there so that they haven't had to meddle in the affairs of the Bills. And the Bills have been a playoff team for the last couple of years, which is something you could not have said. Well, I think it had been a decade since the Bills had had made the playoffs, but they haven't been able to hire the right people. They've been meddling in the operations of the Buffalo Sabres too much. And I think that's what you see. The result, the proof is in the pudding. And it's a Buffalo Sabres team that just continues to struggle, continues to spin their wheels. And, you know, I put out a tweet and a poll on Twitter the other day, and it was completely tongue in cheek and it was completely facetious. But I said, you know, would you rather be a fan of the Buffalo Sabres? Would you rather be a fan of the Cleveland Browns? Or are you choosing Hemlock? And Hemlock won. So, I mean, I think that says it all, is that more people would rather choose Hemlock than be a fan of either the Buffalo Sabres or the Cleveland Browns right now.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting, Drew, to see, you know, who Kevin Adams brings in as his assistant general manager, if he's allowed to by the Pakulas.
Yeah.
You expect him to have an assistant GM, but I mean, how many scouts do they have left? I think they only have like three or four. It's just ridiculous. Like they have to find, you know, someone to run the Rochester Americans, Dave. They have to, you know, bring in some amateur scouts, and you have a draft coming up in, you know, what, 3 or 4 months, right? With a high pick. So it's just, I mean, Kevin Adams, he has a big, big, you know, long road ahead of him to kind of get the Sabres on the right track. And when you can't make the playoffs in a year in which 24 of 31 teams make the playoffs, and you've got Jack Eichel and you've got Rasmus Dahlin, right? You've got two first overall picks. Like, I just don't know, you know, like, and the vote of confidence by the Pegulas to Jason Botterill. I mean, I'm personally a
huge... 3 weeks ago.
Well, exactly. And I'm a huge Jason Botterill guy, and I won't be surprised if, you know, either the Pittsburgh Penguins bring Jason Botterill back or another NHL team brings him in, because I think he's a very bright guy. And I think, you know, he's a very smart hockey guy specifically. You know, I think he's better off, quite frankly, with another team.
Quick one. What, one word answer. Does Jack Eichel ask for a trade?
No.
Not right now, but who knows?
Time will tell. The last word here on the Illegal Curvecast is brought to you by Zappia Group Realty, our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia. If you're looking to sell your house, or maybe you're looking to buy a house, the Zappias are all that you need to get that done. Check them out online. That's at zappiagroup.com. Big thank you to Jesse Granger of TheAthletic.com in Vegas for joining us to talk about the Golden Knights as you know, as a team entering the playoffs whenever those begin, and as Vegas as a hub city. Big thank you to my colleagues. Ezra, you look handsome, you know, more handsome than usual now that you're they've shaved the beast. And Dave, you're looking well as always. And softball gets underway on Tuesday, Dave. So I hope that you're going to be in mid-season form, no doubt. And yeah, there you go.
And get some dingers, Dave.
Yeah, Dave loves to hit those dingers. For Ezra, for Dave, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the Illegal Curve Curvecast.